What's going on, FA Nation? Welcome back. This is the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I'm Dane Malin, and I am joined, as always, by our resident FSWA three-time NASCAR writer of the year, Matt Sells. He's at the Sellsman on Twitter. Matt, how you doing? We are talking Bristol this week.
I'm good. Feeling a little refreshed. Was supposed to have a vacation this week. Basically did, but it was a staycation because of car trouble. Otherwise, I would have just driven past Bristol because I was supposed to visit my brother down in that neck of the woods Thursday. Yeah, so I would have just driven past the last great Coliseum, which luckily there was no on-track stuff today because there was a lot of rain in that area today on Friday. So we get Xfinity gets the week off, and it's trucks and cup. So, you know, kind of a two-series weekend here. Late start, too, on Saturday. It's a little disappointing, to be honest.
Very odd. We're recording this Friday night. I've done the typical early driver preview for the Truck Series article, and it's weird because usually I have Truck and Xfinity buttoned up, and they usually run their practice and qualifying sessions on the morning on the East Coast. 3 o'clock for practice. They probably get qualifying underway around 3:30, 3:45, if I had to guess, for the trucks. And then, you know, that's going to take maybe an hour. Probably not, because Bristol is such a short track. Like, the laps are, you know, shouldn't take that long, I suppose. But yeah, even Cup Series, it's a late practice for a
5 Eastern practice or something.
I guess the good thing you can take away from that is that, you know, during practice, that's pretty much going to be the time of day when, you know, you're looking at stages 2 and 3 if the the track conditions are arguably the same as on Sunday. So I guess that is like the benefit to running practice later. Very odd schedule, but we do get the trucks under the lights Saturday night. There's not a big UFC card to contend with, unlike last week. So yeah, I'll be glued to my TV watching NASCAR this weekend. Love Bristol. Thank God it's not on dirt anymore.
That is true. Yeah, we kind of buried
a great weekend. Right?
It's a concrete Bristol again, no dirt Bristol. So that, you know, I was excited the first time they announced it, and then it just went. It was not great. I mean, the last year was great, right? They finally dialed in the track. They finally had restart procedures good. The weather, you know,
they didn't have to change the rules on the restarts like mid race.
The weather cooperated. you know who's gonna miss Bristol dirt though is Austin Dillon. He was really good at Bristol dirt, and he's not good at concrete Bristol. So, so there's that. it does make for an interesting DFS strategy because we can't really use the last two Bristol spring races, last three Bristol spring races, because they're on dirt. They don't does not compute, right? So, we'll have
strategy. The other thing I was considering though. Because typically, you know, they run Bristol, what, April, May? It's never really run in March. So it's, I guess, like when I was looking at the truck race, I'm like, you know, we might get similar conditions to when they run this race in the fall. Like it could be slightly a little more chilly Saturday night. Now, granted, the Sunday race is going to be run during warmer track conditions. But, you know, it's not like we're going to get two varying degrees of like, you know, different climates for this race. I think it could be somewhat similar.
Similar, but you got to keep in mind that the fall cup race here is a night race. It's a Saturday true. Night race for the cup race. So even if the temps are similar, you're still talking a night race where the temps drop.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we'll sort it out. We'll get practice, which is nice. So we'll be able to actually, you know, see what they look like. Hopefully they kind of sorted out some of the package from last week because the Phoenix race was.
Well, they're running the intermediate package for Bristol.
Which should help.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, I guess so. On that note, if you want to look at Dover, then we can use Dover because, yes, yeah. Dover is twice as long, right? But it is pretty steeply banked. It's concrete. And Dover has always run the intermediate package. They have not run the short package at Dover because of the banking, because of, you know, whatnot. So when we're looking at comping tracks, instead of sticking to the normal short tracks, we're going to look a little bit more at Bristol and, you know, past Bristol races and Dover for the most part. And then I don't know that I would full go intermediates. Like, I'm not going to comp Bristol to Nashville,
Michigan
or Kansas.
Pocono.
It's not, yeah, I'm not comping it to Pocono flat triangle versus half mile highly banked.
Yeah.
You know, not even go with Darlington, to be honest. So we'll still mix in a little bit of short tracks because, to be honest, you still have to approach this as a short track, regardless of the package on the car. You're still approaching it as a short track because it's a half mile. It's tough to pass. There's going to be a lot of laps and a lot of laps led by probably two drivers, I would imagine. Maybe a third gets in there. We'll see. What was your thoughts on Phoenix, though?
Oh, I was actually just about to ask you. I wasn't that impressed. I was really bored. Very tough to pass. The Toyotas look great. I don't know where I heard this, but somebody on Twitter, whenever I hear a really cool NASCAR stat, I just want to credit Ryan with iFantasy Racing. But somebody out there found this nugget that I can't remember how long it's been, but like, yeah, all four Joe Gibbs Racing drivers led 50 laps.
No
team has ever done that before. Yeah,
no team with four drivers has ever had everybody lead 50 or more laps in a single race. It's never happened. And I think it was it may have been Pockrass or Gluck that had it. I saw the same tweet too. I can't remember who. But yeah, that's never happened in the history of NASCAR. So that's cool. It was also not voted very highly in Jeff Gluck's thing. There's rumors that the 2025 championship is going to be moved back to Homestead.
God. Oh my God.
That'd there are rumors. Amazing. I don't know how actionable they are, but there are
so
rumors
if,
moving back.
If that happens, do you think Homestead would then get two races a year? Because you can't really have a championship race without like the drivers getting on the track earlier in the year, I feel.
I don't know. Because Homestead had the championship and only had one date.
Yeah.
That was the only time.
It's such a great track. There.
It's such a good track, though. I really do wish it got two dates. Yeah. I don't know if you knock Phoenix down to one. I mean, they sell it out as their argument.
You know, 3 months ago, I would have told you that Atlanta can go to one date.
I mean, that's true. Texas, you could just kick Texas
completely. Just get rid of Texas,
off the schedule, put it at Homestead. That's fine. But yeah, there are rumors. I don't know how actionable they are. There's also rumors that, you know, horsepower is a thing that should be in the cars, and according to Kyle Larson, it could be there this week. I don't know.
It was just a really hard race to enjoy, and for me, from a DFS perspective, I didn't have a great day, and it was clearly off to a bad start when I slept through my alarms in the afternoon because I laid down just to fall, like, get caught up on some sleep. And I had reservations to build 20 lineups across a variety of contests, and I only got to 10, and I forgot to set the other 10. So I was already in the hole. Wasn't a great DFS day because of that. And overall, very tough race to enjoy. Watched the whole thing. I don't know why, but it was tough to really enjoy.
Yeah, I almost had a great hit in a top 10 bet, and then their pit strategy just didn't work, so they faded late. But with like 20 laps to go, who the heck? Oh, was it Priest for the top 10? I think I had Priest at a top 10 at like plus 700 or something. And he was in there for a while, I think waiting on a caution that never came because it's Phoenix. And then he needed gas and tires and was never heard from again. But yeah, I don't know. Let's move on to Bristol, the lovely, lovely track of Bristol with no dirt on it. Like we said earlier, it is a short track. So for DFS strategy, we are going with a short track strategy, right? We're focusing on dominators because there are 500 laps in this race, and they get clicked off pretty quick. So if a guy's out front, they can lead you a boatload of laps in the blink of an eye. Typically, we're looking at two dominators for Bristol.
There might even go as far as three. Yeah,
you could go as far as three. It's hard to tell with the intermediate package if it's going to help or hinder laps led, like in terms of how like dominators. But typically, if you're going to get green flag racing, you could get two dominators, and then you could get another guy with like maybe 50 laps led. Is kind of how I'm looking at it. And PD is pretty tough to find here, to be honest. I saw a stat. I think it was Ryan with iFantasy Racing that said seven of the – no, I'm pretty sure that this was his tweet.
He's just giving credit for everything.
He is. Seven of the last eight winners have started inside the top eight, I think is what it said.
That sounds accurate, yeah.
So – if you're looking for winners, and if you're looking for, you know, a person who's going to lead a bunch of laps and then win the race, you're looking for guys starting inside the top eight in the field. So we've kind of got a run here of track position mattered at Vegas, and then it really mattered at Phoenix, and then it's kind of back to like the Vegas scenario here at Bristol.
I'll even say, you know, when we're on this discussion of two or three dominators, the way that pricing really shook out this week, there are plenty of names in that 8K range. And even, you know, we were discussing Ty Gibbs before the podcast. He's $8,000, same exact price tag he was last week. you know, he had a great showing leading 57 laps with 18 fastest laps, and he grabbed his second straight top five finish. He's still only $8,000. Now, you can still go out and easily fit like a Christopher Bell and a William Byron. I'm not saying this is how all lineups should start because we don't even know the starting order, but let's just say like you had Gibbs, Bell, Byron, three guys that have shown that they can get out and run up front, and Bell has great history at Bristol as well. That leaves you with $20,300 to round out the rest of your lineup, and you certainly can do that. Like, let's just say like Corey LaJoie goes out and qualifies top 20. Sure, on a normal track, you would assume that he goes backward, but if he can just keep the car clean and just fight and stay on the lead lap, maybe only lose one lap, he can still probably score pretty well. So given how pricing is shook out, and I'm very excited about Ty Gibbs. I hope that he qualifies well again because I'd love to play him again this week at this track where he was 13-1 earlier in the week to win the race, and he's only 8,000. But you still have a guy like Chase Elliott, who's 8,300, Ross Chastain, 8,500, Martin Truex Jr. We don't really think of Marty as like a big Bristol guy, but he's only 8,800. And again, like he led 50 laps last week. And Tyler Reddick, another fast Toyota, was 9,000. So I think like the way that pricing played out, you can certainly go with three dominators. But if you do go two dominators, that just means that you can probably take a more balanced approach and live more in the 7K range with the remaining four drivers. But that's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I was so while you were talking there, it's funny that you mentioned the drivers you did because it was like the top five finishers from last fall.
Oh,
and Bell and Gibbs both led over 100 laps in that race. Hamlin also led over 100 laps. So last fall, there were three guys that led over 100 laps. The fall before that, there was also three guys that led over 100 laps. In that race, Bell was also another one of those. And then there was two RFK guys in Buescher and Keselowski. So, you know, we are seeing two and three dominator, a race raise here. And there's certainly enough laps led to account for that. Cause again, there's 500 laps in this race. The fall race in 2021 here saw two drivers lead over 120 laps each. One was Chase Elliott, one was Kyle Larson. Harvick led 71 laps. Hamlin led 65.
And I think the importance of discussing the laps led, and because we have Bristol this week, and I think we have COTA next week, right?
Correct.
Yeah, we have.
And then it goes Martinsville and Richmond.
Yeah, so we have a lot of laps to target over the next month with the exception of COTA. But like we talk about the dominator points and the laps led heavily for a race like this, because 500 laps led means that on DraftKings, we have at most 350 dominator points on the table. It's probably going to be closer to, if I had to guess, 320. when you account for cautions, and they don't reward fastest laps for cautions, obviously. But over 300 Dominator points is a lot to account for. Next week at COTA, we're not going to give a crap about laps led because there's only going to be, I don't know what.
Like how many? There's something not like many
that.
Laps.
Yeah, it's a road course, so there's not going to be that many laps to lead. But even on FanDuel this week, when we crap on FanDuel scoring time and time again, those laps led across a 500-lap race, and even the laps completed on FanDuel, those play a pretty big role, especially if you have guys that are staying on the lead lap.
Yeah, if you on FanDuel this week, if you nab every lap led in your lineup, right? Everybody in your lineup leads all of the laps. There's not a, like, you know, not one guy that leads 500, but say three dudes split them and you have all three guys, right? That's 50 points. And then if all five of your drivers complete every lap and finish on the lead lap, that's 250 points. Across that lineup. So, you know, just in the laps completed, there's a sizable chunk there. And then if you get, heck, even 60% of laps led, you're still talking that's another 30 points on FanDuel that can make a big difference. So, you know, these laps do add up on FanDuel. I know we crap on their scoring a lot, but at a place like Bristol, they really do. And then Martinsville in a couple of weeks, they really do add up. So, but in terms of position differential, we've talked about this, I think, just about every time we've come to Bristol, but it's pretty hard to convince us to play anybody starting in the, you know, outside the top 30.
Especially if they're in bad equipment.
Right. Now, the argument against that was Kyle Larson last fall. Because he started 36th.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, like that car and the driver are just so good that it'll organically, naturally
move up. He also used crafty pit strategy because they're Hendrick and that pit crew was actually quick, unlike some others. So he started 36 and finished second and also led 20 laps and, like, he was ridiculous. That's about the only dude I trust starting in the 30s and playing him. Because it's Kyle Larson and he's a talented, talented dude. But if we look at the rest of the top 10 finishers last fall, one other guy started outside the top 20 and finished inside the top 10. And that was Stenhouse starting 25th and finishing 10th.
He does it. He does that on the most random days.
The weeks you don't expect it.
You hope to nail that. Like there are some races, like last week I played Stenhouse at Phoenix and I stopped checking my lineups when I realized that 10 of my lineups were collecting zeros. But you always hope to like find that one magical weekend where Ricky Stenhouse Jr. puts it together on a track where he shouldn't.
Yeah.
And that's like exhibit A of like it started P25 and grabbed the top 10 at Bristol when he had no business doing so.
Yeah. I mean, that's not usually a track you think of for Ricky Stenhouse. Just, you know, finishing up the tangent, his average finish over the last six concrete Bristol races is 28.3.
Yeah.
And that includes the P10. There's a 33, 34, 40, 20, 33, and 10. Which one is not like the others? So, you know, unfortunately, with the way that this field sets up, it does kind of limit where to get different. So that's why the mid-tier is going to be incredibly valuable to us this week to get different. Just because, you know, it's fairly easy to figure out who's going to be the laps led dominators up front, or pretty easy to nail, say, two of the three.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's going to be limited choices in the budget tier, like there always is, but especially at Bristol, because a lot of them are going to be starting in the back. And if it's not better equipment than we give it credit for, it's going to get lapped early and often. So the mid-tier is going to be vital this week.
I don't really want to dwell too much on the top tier. There's six guys priced over 10K. Chris Buescher is hilariously 9,800. I'll give
you one guy I'm not playing in that tier.
Okay, go ahead.
Unless he's on the poll. Let me caveat this because somebody's going to listen to the pod and go, see, I'm playing. If Kyle Busch is on the poll, I'm playing him. But if he has a so-so qualifying, I am not playing Kyle Busch in 10-2. He's done nothing this year to convince me that he's worth $10,000. He's getting a bump because it's Bristol, and we've hilariously referred to it as Bushtel for a while because the Busch brothers flat-out dominate here. But even with that said, if you look at the last six concrete races at Bristol, Kyle Busch finished fourth, fourth, and second in the first three. Then he finished 21st, 34th, and 20th in the last three. So there's not, like, at 10-2, you need him to lead laps. You need him to contend for a win at Bristol like he has in the past. I don't know. Like, their pit crew is still getting together.
They're still making changes.
Bob Pockers tweeted today on Friday that they're still making changes to the pit crew roster for that team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I can't trust that. You screw something up at Bristol, you're losing four laps on a pit stop.
Yeah.
But Buescher is hilariously priced at 9,800.
Yeah, I mean, I get it.
He's been good.
He's one year in the next gen car. In general, had a phenomenal year last year. So it's like there's more win equity than there has ever been before. And the price tag is probably just reflective off the win that he got here in 2022. but would you be higher on the Toyotas or the Fords heading into this race? I think the general consensus is the Toyotas.
It's hard to disagree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, they looked really good last week at Phoenix. Now, it is the intermediate package. So, if you want to talk about that, okay, go to Vegas. They looked pretty dang good in Vegas, too.
Yeah.
And they looked pretty dang good in Atlanta, which, again, sure, plate race, but intermediate track where laps led do matter and you can kind of hold the lead. Not in that particular race because that was bonkers, but I would probably have to go with Toyotas right now until we see cars on track.
You know, the top tier will play itself out. Really just depends on who's on the pole, who is in position to lead laps throughout the race, you know. Mid-range, we did touch on a little bit. I love Ty Gibbs this week. Kind of interested in Bubba, Chase Briscoe, Eric Jones.
I have a bet of Bubba written up.
All right, what is it? Or do you not want to share?
So the betting piece is not quite finished yet. It will be out Saturday morning, but I do have a Bubba Wallace top 10 finish at plus 170. He's finished in the top what did I write up here? Sorry, I'm trying to reread what I wrote. He's nabbed three top 14 finishes or better in the six Bristol Concrete races he's run in the next-gen car. And in the 23 short track races, plus some Bristol, some Dover mixed in, he's posted 10 top 15 finishes and six of the last seven of those races have been top 15 finishes for Bubba. So there's some intrigue there. He's run decently well at Bristol. I quite like Michael McDowell this week too.
I actually like him and Todd Gilliland.
I do like Todd Gilliland.
In the next gen car, and this is very small sample size because we only have, you know, two races to consider. He started P30 in both Bristol Concrete races. Finished 16th and 18th.
Finished 11th and 6th in the last two Bristol Concrete races.
Yeah, like, and, you know,
he started fourth in the one he finished 6th, so he held his spot.
Yeah, and that's all you can really ask. But at the same time, it's like they have that Penske alliance, that affiliation. kind of curious to see how it plays out this weekend. So far, like they've had speed. You know, Gilliland was he the one that like over the first two races this year led more races than Austin Dillon's led in the last 4 years or something?
Yeah, he led 74. I think he led 74 laps between Daytona and Atlanta, and that's more laps led than Austin Dillon's had dating back to the like, including the 2020 season. So 2020, 2021, 2022, and 2023, Austin Dillon had like 70 total laps led or something. Gilliland led 74 through Daytona and Atlanta. Not a lot to show for it, but he was leading laps. So
I think another affordable guy that I'm really into, and for obvious reasons, you know, we like Chase Briscoe, we like Noah Gragson. It's not a short flat track, but I am kind of interested in Ryan Preece.
I have a bet for him too.
All right, we are
plus 500 top 10 finish this week. I know I bet on him for Phoenix, same principle. Shorter track, Priest is good at those. The aero and the Fords doesn't really come into play as much on these tracks. Priest has run 5 concrete Bristol races. Here, his average finish is 13.6 in those races.
So I also think that,
by the way, his average start is 24.4. So it's not like he's qualifying well and then holding it. He's actually moving up like almost 10 spots a race.
I've seen that in all of his Cup Series races here, or I think I counted 5 or 6. He's gained at least 5 spots of PD in each, and then in 3 of those, he's gained double digit spots.
He started 33rd one race and finished 12th. He started 22nd and finished 9th. Started 27th and finished 17th. So he knows how to move up here. I quite like Ryan Preece. I'm not sure a lot of people are still paying attention to Ryan Preece because SHR is getting crapped on left, right, and center. Regardless of if they should be or not. Good run.
And I was wrong on Briscoe. I didn't love the play of Briscoe, but like they haven't been bad. Josh Berry hasn't really done anything that's worth writing home about, I don't think.
Correct.
Just Briscoe one top 20. Phoenix. Yeah, Briscoe did well. He was also having a really good run at Vegas, if I remember, but like he was holding his position for most of that race, just didn't get the finish that I think it was like a pit strategy or something happened late that caused him to lose track position.
I think he got involved in an accident.
Ah, that might have been it, yeah. But, I mean, Noah Gragson.
Eric Jones and Briscoe got involved in something.
But, like, Noah Gragson's got 3 top 12 finishes. He has 2 top 10s. He was 9th at Daytona, 6th at Vegas when you locked in the 5-1 odds on him getting a top 10. And he was 12th last week. Like Gragson and Briscoe have actually done fine. I think Priest can turn that corner this week. And I don't really know what we're going to get out of Josh Berry. The 4 car carried SHR for years, and now it looks like it's the worst one.
And by the way, it's not like Eric Almirola was a slouch at Bristol. So that team knows how to set up the car if we're going with that, you know, logic, which doesn't necessarily hold a ton of weight, but it's something that's interesting to look at. Kieslowski at 9.2, I think, is interesting, depending on where he qualifies. Because if he qualifies too high, PD's out, then you're going to need him to lead laps, which I'm not sure he does. But if he qualifies, say, like 20th, he can nab a top 10 and get you plenty of PD for 9,200.
You're kind of, if he qualifies there, you're kind of just expecting him or hoping that he can just do what he's done the last 2 weeks. Because at Vegas, he started P25, finished 13th. Last week, he started P18 and finished 4th.
Yep, exactly. Exactly what you're...
It's strange. It's the super speedways or the drafting races that we love targeting him on. And he finished 33rd in Daytona at Atlanta and then turns it around for Vegas and Phoenix.
Yeah, that's because his blocking gets him into trouble at the at the plate races. In terms of like anybody below Gilliland, I don't know.
Yeah, and even Todd isn't one that I have a ton of confidence.
Maybe Osar.
Yeah, I could see it. The problem is that he's probably going to overqualify, which if he does, again, we've touched on this, that's fine if he holds
well, the spot. Where would you consider overqualifying?
Well, he's qualified top 10 twice already this year. So I'd probably for Bristol, maybe the cutoff might be if he qualifies like P13 or 14.
Okay, because he ran this race last year. Not a specific race, but ran the fall race here last year. He qualified at 16th and finished 11th.
Yeah, that's perfect. mean, that's amazing.
That's why I was asking what qualifies as over qualifying here, because I could understand top 10, we get a little iffy as to,
yeah,
because at that point, you're assuming people you expect to finish top 10 have qualified behind him, which means he'll get shifted. But at 5,800, it's worth, I mean, I don't know. He finished, so let's put it this way. At Vegas, he started 14th, finished 15th. He was $5,800 with on DK, which is exactly what he is for Bristol, and put up 31 points, which is better than 5X. So if he does that again, that's fair. Like if you get Hosovar in your lineup, let's just say we start with him, and then I want Larson because he's ridiculous here. His average finish in the last six races is like 3.7.
Mm-hmm.
And the next closest is Denny Hamlin at 9.7. So Larson is just really, really good here. I'll go with Bell. Just see if we can't fit two 11 grand guys in a build and see where we wind up here. We like Ty Gibbs at 8,000, right?
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable. We like McDowell at 6,800. Okay, so now that'll give me a 6,700 left, which gives me Ryan Preece at 5,900.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have Preece, Hosovar, Larson, Bell, and Gibbs, and McDowell. Depending on where they qualify, I don't hate that.
And what? That gives you 1,000 left over?
1,000 left over. So I could actually get off of, like, McDowell and go up to, I don't know, Eric Jones. Bubba at 77, if you get off McDowell. If you get off of Preece, you could get up to Gragson at 6,700.
Yeah.
If you get off Hosovar, you could, again, get up to Gragson for 6,700. So, not terrible. You can get a couple of $11,000 dudes and still feel comfy.
Yeah. Any final thoughts before we give it the boot?
No, I mean, obviously, this is out. You're listening to this. It's Saturday because thanks to scheduling issues, it came out a day later. Playbook will be out probably Saturday evening, I would imagine, with later practice and qualifying. Projections will be out Sunday morning. Check out the betting piece. That if you're listening to this, there's a decent chance the betting piece is already out or coming out shortly.
Nice.
Grover's Grill will be out Saturday at some point as well between Rouse and I. I made a delicious pork dish. Fantastic. Any other final thoughts? I don't know. Anybody, on a serious note here, though, anybody in the middle of the country that was hit by tornadoes on Thursday night, I seriously hope you guys are okay. I know there were some in Arkansas. There were some, I believe, in Tennessee. Kansas got hit on Wednesday night. Ohio got decked. Indiana had some damage, too. Saw a tornado going across the Ohio River from Kentucky to Ohio. That was just nuts. So, you know, anybody knows anybody that had stuff damaged, hopefully they're you know, themselves and animals are safe.
Well, Matt, well said. And we will just do our best with Bristol this weekend. So thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you and best of luck to the FA Nation.
Best of luck, FA Nation.